Hello and welcome back to Herbs, Acupuncture, and Everything Else. It has been a minute. This is still Herbalist Emma, and today we have a very special guest who's near and dear to my heart, holistic nutritionist, osteopath, and functional medicine practitioner, Nathan Olande. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
10 out of 10.
Hello.
Hello! So we're going to chat about all the things, and it's going to be a good one. We're mostly going to be chatting about how all of the beautiful things that Nathan does for the community and all the different modalities that he uses go together in this episode. Alrighty, so I guess to start the background off, I tend to always say how I've met the person that's on the podcast. So I should preface with that I met Nathan when I, you know, arrived at my new job, and he's the manager of the place that I work, and also just an amazing practitioner all around, which was obvious like within the first 5 minutes of meeting him. So after kind of shadowing with Nathan for a couple months, I was like, he has to be on the podcast. We have to talk about the things. And I personally haven't met a lot of people that do any functional medicine stuff. Honestly, haven't met a lot of people that do. So that was something about kind of how you operate that was very interesting and new to me. Yeah. So I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about how you found this stuff, this holistic medicine stuff.
Okay. Well, what had happened was I started walking away from my traditional Filipino cultural medicine roots and really started getting into the hardcore evidence-based medicine science. And one day I was really, really sick, and I was in and out of the hospital for more than 6 months, even to the point where I was accidentally given radioactive dye because they confused my charts with another patient. And doctors didn't really have the solution. They just said it was psychological. They wanted to put me on an antidepressant. And so I ended up stumbling upon a naturopath through a family friend. And because naturopathic medicine is not regulated in the province of Quebec, this person had a naturopathic diploma but was not an actual naturopathic doctor. So they prescribed a lot of homeopathics and supplements, and I started feeling better. But the moment I stopped taking those supplements, I felt like a lot of my symptoms were creeping and crawling back. And so they didn't really focus on the nutrition and the lifestyle changes and having properly layered protocols. And so after working with that practitioner who got me on the right track and at least stopped some of the suffering that I was going through, that led me into Google Scholar and looking into nutrition research and all that, and just trying to find a better way and improving my diet and lifestyle, which made more of the long-term overall changes in my health. And that's how I got into this thing.
Amazing. Yeah, and I think it's an important piece to point out. I mean, this is like a slight tangent, but that even if it's supplements or herbs or homeopathy or whatever it is that you're taking, if you're just taking it and then the symptoms come back, it's not solving the problem, right? So the holistic view is super important. And is that why you were like, yes, nutrition is where I need to go?
Yeah. So I really started getting into it at the age of like 16. Like, so 14, 15, 16 is when I started doing a lot of research. And 16 was the year where I was deep into the shits. And
literally or metaphorically?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Gut microbiome, man.
It's bad.
And so I also started working at a health food store. I remember I was helping a bunch of clients and customers, and I was approached by a holistic nutritionist who walked into the store, and she said, you know what, you're really knowledgeable. You know you can get paid for this. And I was like, what are you talking about? And that's when I decided to, as I was going through high school, to take holistic nutrition when I was done my program.
That's amazing. That was early then for you.
Oh,
that was
yes.
Like the first thing you did out of high school. It was like, yes, out of the gate, I'm going to do this. I think that explains why your knowledge is so bang on and, like, intensely memorize. Like, I don't understand how you memorize the things you memorize. The memory on this human being is amazing. And I wonder, maybe that's because you started so young and the brain was so moldable and it was just like,
yeah,
soak up all the info. So I guess then my follow-up question would be, what kind of made you, after nutrition school, which is 3 years, is it 4 years?
Oh, holistic nutrition is only a year program.
Really?
Yeah.
No way. Is that across the board, all programs?
For the most part, yes.
That's
There's
so
only
wacky.
One school in Canada for holistic nutrition that has a 3-year program with clinical internship.
Yeah.
And that's in Victoria, BC.
Really? Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I thought they were, like, long programs. But, I mean, okay, so after that, what made you want to continue with adding things to your toolkit, specifically osteopathy and functional medicine stuff?
So, that naturopath that I saw when I was sick was also an osteopath.
Mm.
And during this time in my life, I wasn't the only one that was sick. It was my mother and my father. And so I remember being dropped off with my mom to the Children's Hospital in Montreal, St. Justin's, and my dad running to the hospital next door because he was thinking instead of having a heart attack when it was just myopathy associated from taking a statin medication, which we had no idea was a side effect at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad was now on workers' compensation. He had a really tough time with his back, and so this osteopath helped rehabilitate my father. And I grew up with, you know, different modalities of acupressure and reflexology and massage and traditional Filipino massage and physiotherapy and chiropractic, and a lot of these family friends that had helped my father, they would show me how to do some of these techniques or these things to help alleviate his pain. And so even at a very young age, around like the age of 4, I remember starting my informal education of body work. And osteopathy, after my father was rehabilitated and we moved to Edmonton, was something that was a bit forgotten. Until I remember seeing one patient whose stool elastase, which is an enzyme marker for pancreatic function, was just very insufficient. And we had tried the regular, you know, SIBO-based protocols of using antimicrobials and prokinetics and some probiotics and digestive enzymes and bitters and this, that, and the other. And this patient had not been improving with their health. And it was only until they saw an osteopath that kind of did some visceral manipulations that helped make the changes. And this was because that patient was in a car accident, and that car accident where she hit her abdomen hit the steering wheel shifted some of where her organs may have been. And so the moment she started that visceral work, we started to notice changes in her symptoms, and that's when I started to remember osteopathy again. And I didn't want it to just do, you know, the mobilizations or the manipulations like a chiropractor. I didn't just want to do the stretches like a physio. I didn't want to just rub people down with oil like a massage therapist.
Yeah.
Acupuncture in Chinese medicine is, it's a whole new level of thinking that it didn't come natural to me.
Didn't seem like where you were at.
No. So that's where I stumbled upon osteopathy and how it was very holistic and it was very complete, and it covered everything from viscera to craniosacral to your regular musculoskeletal stuff. It was just the complete picture for me, and I want to be able to help my patients both internally and externally. And having done a lot of the external work from starting from the age of 4, so to say, it was just a perfect fit for me.
Because I feel like having body work as a part of a practice is amazing, I think, to just, be the most holistic practitioner you can be. And I think a lot of people don't actually know what osteopathy even is. Like, I only recently learned it. Like, I knew what chiro was before osteopathy. I think I knew, like, obviously knew about massage, knew about acupuncture. So osteopathy is kind of like almost like a little hidden gem. in the alternative health community. Oh, I think, anyway, because I know a lot of people, at least the in the herbal sphere, might not know what an osteopath is.
Okay.
Yeah. What? How would you define it if you had to, like, kind of sum up? I know you kind of did already, but...
Yeah, so I think osteopaths, so they're actually the originators, and out of that was birthed chiropractic. The father of osteopathy, though, believed that a lot of the life force and the energy and the healing mechanisms were in the blood, whereas the doctor of chiropractic was like, no, it's in the spinal nerves and all that stuff.
Super cool.
Yeah. But I would say osteopathy is just like any, you know, complementary medical practice that they believe, you know, the body can heal itself. There are a few things that they believe, like structure dictates function. So the anatomy dictates the physiology. But overall, how I would describe it is it's a very holistic modality that looks at the body as a whole and not just, let's say, the spinal nerves or the muscles or the cerebrospinal fluid or the blood flow or the lymph. We look at all of it as one congruent being and how it operates and works together.
Which is so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've personally had some of Nathan's osteopathy, and it's great. Like, my back doesn't hurt anymore as much as it used to, and that's fantastic. And so why, then, the functional medicine piece?
So I'm just going to say this as a disclaimer. I have never taken any functional medicine courses.
Right.
The reason why I say I practice functional medicine is because it is what I like to call the methodology behind my madness. Functional medicine to me, some people will define it as a practitioner who orders a kajillion bunch of lab tests. Other people who, you know, define functional medicine say that they did a course in it and that's what they practice it. I think the real nature of functional medicine is using a systems biology approach into understanding and differentiating between the roots and the root cause versus the symptoms. And so when I'm, you know, when I'm saying I'm practicing functional medicine, I'm looking at a person's food, diet and lifestyle, gut health, mitochondrial function, inflammation, oxidative stress, their, you know, environmental toxins, some of their genetics, and I'm taking basically all of these things into consideration and addressing them for a patient from the root to the symptom. So those are the, I guess, for me, the blah blah blahs.
They're the like the nuts and bolts of
They're the systems biology part that I look at to determining what the root causes and the symptoms are to the symptoms.
I love that. And I think like functional medicine can be a bit polarizing because, like you said, there's not really like one definition of functional medicine, or like different practitioners define it and practice it differently.
Yes.
So I've talked to some people that are like, oh, I can't stand functional medicine because it's so expensive, or like the tests are expensive. But then you meet someone like you and the methodology is there and it's amazing, but it's also not super expensive. Like, you're not like, you know, you're not sending them out for $20,000. You know, like, it's just not, because it's also, is it accessible? Is it practical?
It can be.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
It can be. And I think accessibility and practicality is something that is very near and dear to my heart. You know, having parents who are chronically ill, who are also, you know, being economically disadvantaged, having accessible healthcare, or even family friends who took the time to help my dad and my mom and all that was very important. And so I don't think you need to run 5 billion tests to understand that a patient needs to eat more, maybe prebiotic foods and probiotic foods, or if that's not working, maybe we need to use some antimicrobials if there are signs of an overgrowth. If we do see some dysmotility associated with that, we can add that to there. I mean, even just taking regular standard labs and looking at them from a functional perspective is really beneficial for us Canadian-based clinicians, because a lot of those lab tests are free. So, you know, a lot of the times when I'm seeing a patient, I can get their blood results through their doctor and seeing their lab results from a functional perspective already gives me a general really good idea as to what's happening, and mm-hmm. I can address those symptoms without needing a $600 functional stool test
mm-hmm.
or a $600 organic acid test
mm-hmm.
or a $600 Dutch test.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those tools can be used, and if a patient can find it to be affordable and they want to do those testings,
mm-hmm.
I make sure that I can give them that option and I understand how those tests work and
mm-hmm.
we can work with those results. But it may not be as highly necessary as we deem it to be.
Mm-hmm. And just the fact that you have the base knowledge to interpret those results is more important than actually going and getting the tests.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. 100%. And I think that's the really amazing part too, like you said, is in Canada at least, we have a lot of freedom with going to get those tests that are, you know, covered under OHIP. And so, but it's still interesting because you'll get a lot of people that come in with blood results or, you know, different test results that their doctors have deemed normal. And then having a practitioner that knows a little bit about functional med look at it again can actually be really helpful, right? To
yes.
interpret if it's actually functionally working.
Yes.
Yeah. Very.
And
cool.
So, I mean, even when it comes to standard labs, I mean, we've had a discussion
mm-hmm.
about this,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the times what will happen is we'll take what I don't even know what we define as a healthy population.
Right.
We'll take a healthy population of approximately 100 people, draw their blood, and depending upon the marker we're looking at, either draw a standard bell curve
mm-hmm.
or a double bell curve, whatever.
Right.
See what the two standard deviations are and,
yeah.
and say, well, this must be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where
mm-hmm.
some of the research may point otherwise.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, B12 in Canada, it's ridiculous.
Right.
But it, you know, B12 of greater than 150, I think it's picomoles or nanomoles,
mm-hmm.
I forget, but greater than 150 is the standard units,
mm-hmm.
Means that you're not B12 deficient, when a lot of the studies are showing that actually some serum levels for actual B12 deficiency should be either greater than 600 or 800.
Oh my God.
So
huge difference.
So that's nearly 4 or 4.5 times
mm-hmm.
low on the Canadian typical standard reference range compared to what's actually being seen within the literature.
Yep, totally. Oh man, that's bananas. Phew.
And just as a side tangent, if I may.
Yeah.
Even when we look at some of these functional tests, like how much of it is actually clinically significant?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to mention this and I'm probably going to get shot, but I'm going to do it anyways. So an example of that would be, you know, food sensitivity testing,
mm-hmm.
right? We, you know, we'll find different practitioners, and I'm not trying to beat them,
mm-hmm.
but we'll use food sensitivities and we'll say, you're sensitive to these foods, eliminate from your diet,
mm-hmm.
you should be feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but a lot of the times when I'm seeing a patient in my practice, those food sensitivity tests don't make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have to look back and say, okay, well then what's the methodology behind these tests?
Mm-hmm.
And so I call IgG the drag queen of antibodies to my patients.
Because
they're
dramatic.
She's highly dramatic,
yes, yes.
overreactive.
Yeah.
And so what are we doing within an assay to prevent
like
false positives and hyperreactivity
yeah.
from happening?
Yeah.
So you take a food antigen, react it to the IgG antibody, and if it's very highly reactive, we can be getting some false positives or false
mm-hmm.
negatives associated there. Then when we look at the different types of IgG antibodies, a lot of the times people are using IgG4 and not a combination of different IgG
mm-hmm.
antibodies. And then secondly, when you're taking, for instance, meat, so let's say a piece of pork chop.
Right.
You know, I got to make pork chop because I'm Filipino and pigs
right.
like the national animal. and so when they're taking that piece of pork, and they're reacting it with the IgG antibody, are we looking at a cooked piece of pork
mm.
or a raw piece of pork?
Which
because
totally
then the
different.
Protein structure changes when we
yeah.
add heat and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then also how you cook a piece of
mm-hmm.
meat or process those proteins also will change
right.
the protein structure.
Right.
So we don't know whether a lot of the times whether or not we're using a combination of these IgG antibodies. We also know that IgG is highly reactive,
mm-hmm.
and we also don't know how these proteins are being highly processed in a way that might mimic those proteins being actually in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we verify or validify the test that's being used from a functional medicine perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the research, unfortunately, as you know, if you are very hardcore science-based, IgG food sensitivity testing is 50-50.
Right, which is a lot to base, you know what I mean? Because people get it done and then they're like, this is the gold standard, I can't eat any of these foods.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
So when it comes to these different functional tests, I mean, I had a patient who spent nearly $15,000 on functional tests. And some of these tests had no clinical validity behind them.
Right.
So, and that's why I say functional medicine is not the amount of tests that you run or have access to. It is the philosophy, it is the methodology behind how you approach a patient in clinical care.
Yeah, totally. Yep. One of the people that I was seeing for a while, patient-wise, had he went and did the same thing. Huge list, like most legumes, most vegetables, most meat. And he was like, what do I eat? But he was also in such a highly reactive, inflamed state when he took the test that I was like, how accurate is this? Because right now, sure, your body's reacting to everything. But your baseline shouldn't be that way, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then, yeah.
And so that's why, like, within functional medicine, the way I would approach even food sensitivities are, if there is some form of inflammatory process or even some form of dysbiosis taking place within the gut, then why don't we correct that first and heal for the most part? And then if you wanted to see what foods you may still be having some form of inflammatory reaction to, then maybe consider a food sensitivity test. But there are even other food sensitivity tests that are on the market that have better validity and better clinical science and information to back it up versus a regular IgG food sensitivity test, such as ALCAT. So I think it's really important for clinicians to understand, even just properly layering a protocol,
which is one of the harder things to learn as a baby practitioner, is layering your protocols. 100%. Because you have to also therefore anticipate, like, the phases, the stages. You have to anticipate, okay, if this is my first wave of treatment, what is, and then what's the reaction I'm hoping to get, and then what do I do next? And that's definitely something that not isn't taught, but as someone that's a recent grad and still in school, I think that should be a bigger part of the training, is how to make a long protocol, not a short protocol. Because we're really good at being like, okay, this is the problem, let's fix it now. But then where are we in 3 months, 6 months? Or how long do you think it's going to take?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a tangent in and of itself.
Yes.
Ooh. So we've kind of already touched on this, but like with like integration, if it's fair for me to say, integration is a huge part of your practice. Like integrating as much as possible in multiple ways. Why is integration so important to you?
What do you mean by integration?
I mean, I think the original question was integration of different modalities so important to you, but that could also extend to like accessibility and like affordability and different things like that. Like, why is the integration of all of these different things so important?
So in terms of integration for, let's say, modalities or integrating different modalities, I think why it's important is because I think we've really lost touch in medicine when it comes to community healing. And we didn't have one doctor for all our problems, right? We had a community that helped establish that healing. And so, you know, even as a holistic nutritionist, there may be things that I may be doing with a patient, but maybe there are other things that I may not have access to. And so referring off to a naturopath that can, you know, help carry out some of these other clinical treatments could be important. Let's talk about our relationship, you know. I will have patients and, you know, my herbal botanical medicine is more, I'm more limited to understanding the pharmacological aspects. And I do have a basic understanding of the different types of herbs and is it a nervine? Is it a bitter? Is it astringent? Is it this? But when it comes to even how to properly use these herbs within their context, and I mean, what I love is that you also add the whole traditional Chinese medicine context behind these herbs as well. is important because
mm-hmm.
I may not have access to it. And so mm-hmm. I think if we, you know, took healing as a picture of seeing the patient in the center and clinicians coming together arm in arm surrounding
mm-hmm.
that patient
mm-hmm.
to help raise them back up
mm-hmm.
to a state where they can be
healthy
yeah. and striving and thriving individual,
mm-hmm.
then integrative medicine and integrating these different modalities plays a key role into my philosophy
mm.
of health.
That's so beautiful.
It's right.
And can one of those practitioners also be a Western doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, right? Yeah.
I mean, I remember meeting a naturopathic doctor, and the medical doctor on staff, or the clinic actually belongs to a medical doctor.
Mm.
And because this medical doctor can only see patients at a particular levels of time
mm-hmm.
and cannot, you know, recommend some of the herb supplements, nutrition, diet,
mm-hmm.
lifestyle stuff that they would typically do if they had a traditional functional medicine practice, so to say,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
integrative medical practice. This doctor literally has a naturopathic doctor on staff. And they will confer with each other, and
mm.
the naturopathic doctor will make their notes of recommendations, and the medical doctor will just sign off of it.
Amazing.
So the medical doctor is doing their part, they're being compensated for,
mm-hmm.
and the naturopathic doctor is on staff, and they're just working together. So I think Western medical community, naturopathic doctors, herbalists, massage therapists, physiotherapists,
mm-hmm.
chiropractors, osteopaths, I think we can all come together. I think there's enough sick people in the world.
For sure.
Because
I also think, too, I mean, like, negative power dynamics, I find, like, most people, I think, have this with their, I shouldn't say most people, some people have this with their primary care physician, where they feel like they have, that physician has all the answers and is the only person that's helping them and the only person they have to look to. So there's, like, a, not a codependency, but, like,
mm-hmm.
there's sometimes, or a hierarchy, and feeling like, I just have this one person that's going to fix my problems, and if he can't fix my problems, no one can fix me.
Yes.
And that's not a healthy dynamic where
no.
healing can't take place, right?
And I think that has to do with how colonialism
mm-hmm.
has affected our societal
yes.
structures.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So colonialism really points towards individualism as opposed to
mm-hmm.
communalism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Ain't
just as
truth?
A
yeah.
as a person of color, we see how colonialism says this is the one thing and the one answer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
healthcare has to be this way,
mm-hmm.
or capitalism is the only answer.
Mm-hmm. And
right?
it's not just this way, but my way.
Yes.
The colonial way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have to learn it,
yes.
and we're going to retrain you and
yes.
re-educate you to believe and do all these things. So,
yes.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. Then this is kind of another like tangent. I feel like the podcasts always just go where they go. The questions go out the window. Do you feel like you are a part of kind of like a counterculture movement?
I was actually thinking about this the other day.
Okay.
And not really, like, maybe counterculture? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I would like to think that instead of being counterculture, I'm like trimming the hedges so that something
mm.
else can grow,
mm.
something else beautiful can grow,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the branches to a vine,
mm-hmm.
you know, you gotta
mm-hmm.
prune for it to develop and grow. And so I remember, you know, talking to a naturopathic doctor colleague
mm.
about some of the issues that I was facing in my practice with, you know, our standard Western conventional
mm-hmm.
community. And they were telling me, well, sometimes you just got to operate within that system.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really hard time digesting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you have to make the change from within. And I think, from a historical standpoint, whenever we've tried to make the change from within, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
And so it has taken revolutionaries
mm-hmm.
to stand up and to call things out and to try to evolve and change the system and make it new as opposed to operating within it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are things that we can learn from within the system, but we can always learn to make things new and nurture and flourish it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if that makes me a counter-revolutionary, I don't know. Or
I mean, however you feel is totally fine.
I just feel like I'm a pruner.
Yeah, I like that. Pruning society. I like it. It needs it. So there's that. Society needs some pruning. So, yes, here's a question kind of going in that direction is, can you kind of elaborate on why you feel that this integrative approach is so important for the LGBTQ2A community? I think I got all the guys in there. Yeah.
All the peoples?
All the peoples in there.
Yeah. LGBTQIA2S+.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
In Canada, we also got our two-spirited people.
Yes, yes.
Which I guess there's also indigenous... Yeah, there are indigenous people in America.
Oh, yeah.
They're just forgotten, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hashtag, we're not even going to go there.
No.
Yeah, so I think, you know, being part of the LGBTQ community, I am a gay, queer, cis man myself.
Mm-hmm.
Although, we're going to put a question mark to the cis, but...
Okay.
We're discovering
yeah.
things.
Yeah. It's a process.
Yes. So this community faces higher rates of mental health conditions,
mm-hmm.
higher rates of sex trafficking,
mm-hmm.
higher rates of suicidality
mm-hmm.
associated with the mental health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of sadness and brokenness within this community.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times I see these people or these patients and they want the best for their health and
mm-hmm.
they go see their medical doctor for things
mm-hmm.
and some shit just doesn't get resolved.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
An example I have is a transgender patient, you know, it was a transgender male going to see their doctor and was really reacting to the testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where they were puking, their bilirubin levels were climbing up.
Right.
And they did not want to stop their testosterone because they were like, I want to get to my fucking transition.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on your
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, it's fine.
But hey.
It's fine.
And so, one of the things we put this patient on was saw palmetto because
mm-hmm.
what we were assuming, well, what I was assuming is that this patient wasn't going through the proper conversion of their
mm-hmm.
testosterone
mm-hmm.
and just by having a bit of saw palmetto into the mix they were able to overcome their symptoms
mm.
their Gilbert syndrome from the elevated
right.
bilirubin levels started to drop and they were able to withstand
continue, yeah.
and continue with their hormone replacement therapy
mm-hmm.
you know I mean we have patients at our pharmacy who you know report of symptoms of fatigue or tiredness
mm-hmm.
who are you know HIV positive taking, you know, ART or
mm-hmm.
antiretroviral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we know that antiretroviral therapy can cause that's quite consistent and really elaborate in the literature is mitochondrial dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of our patients, we put them on general mitochondrial support
mm-hmm.
like acetyl-L-carnitine and CoQ10
mm-hmm.
and PQQ
mm-hmm.
and Japanese knotwood that has trans resveratrol
mm-hmm.
and green tea cathechins and this
mm-hmm.
stuff. And these patients get better and notice less side effects
mm-hmm.
and their glomerular filtration rate improves
mm-hmm.
and their liver enzymes start to come down. So I think integrative medicine within the LGBTQ community is still not widely known because
mm-hmm.
we still don't have many clinicians that are
savvy.
Yeah, that are
yeah.
Well, LGBTQIA2S+
yeah.
savvy
mm-hmm.
when it comes to
savvy. They're
yes.
not very savvy.
Yeah, so they're not very savvy. And so, yes, we don't have enough clinicians that are highly aware of an integrative medical approach for
mm-hmm.
a lot of the LGBTQ health-based issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting more queer or queer-affirming
mm-hmm.
clinicians
mm-hmm.
within this integrative medical field, I think, is
mm-hmm.
is really important.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, too, being able to understand that a lot of people within that community experience a different standard of care
yes.
in their regular interactions with Western medicine, and that providing, like, as clinicians, we need to step up and provide a higher standard of care and
yes.
understanding and empathy for people that are therefore being affected by this, like, colonialist
yes.
medical system. Yeah, even just working in this pharmacy for the last couple months is just, like, already... So much growth and learning just comes from being exposed to experiences that are different than your experience.
Yes.
And I think sometimes with alternative healthcare, there are, like, economic boundaries sometimes, where like a lot of the more functional med or some naturopaths are quite expensive.
Yes.
So the clientele that you're seeing is usually the upper middle class, mostly cisgendered or
white
and all of that, and that's
call
the
it out
let's
for
call
what it
out.
Is. This Filipino boy is going there.
You know, yeah. So like that's what we see, and then you think that that's all there is, especially with practitioners that have spent their whole career just with that one community and that one subset of people, and then that's a whole nother.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's important to keep in mind. I'm glad you bring it up as practitioners that it's our. I don't know if it's our job, but I would like to think it's part of our job to not be an like allopathic Western colonialist practitioner of whatever you're practicing.
Yes.
Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it's also really important. One of the things that I strive within my practice is like people will ask me if I am alternative, and I'm like, no, I'm not substituting anything.
Boom. Mm-hmm.
I am complementary healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I am here to work with your medical doctor. I'm here to work with your healthcare team, your health village, if we can call it that, right? And so I think even if we were to make these social progressions toward having an integrated medical system, I think we need to move away from using terms like alternative healthcare
and move towards
collaborative complementary healthcare.
Yeah, for sure.
Our goal and objective. Because I'm going to tell you, if I fracture my femoral artery, or fall off a roof, fracture, and tear my femoral artery, I'm not going to an acupuncturist, honey. I'm going to the hospital.
Yeah, go get that surgery.
I'm
going to
get the
that.
Surgery, and I'm going to get all that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they play a very important role, but not the whole picture.
Yes.
Yes.
And so when I think of healthcare, I think of hands coming together and shaking each other. Shaking hands.
I like it.
You know, or a hug.
Yeah.
Right.
A hug, that's a big part too. I mean, like, there's, that's a whole nother kettle of worms. But, like, the way that the medical system functions now is that, you know, there's no hugging, there's no empathetic or, like, therapeutic touch. It's just very, like, clinical, and that can be really triggering for people, and there's so much in that.
Yes.
That as complementary healthcare practitioners, I think we get a little bit more wiggle room in, like, especially with body work too. Like, you can interact with the body in a positive, non-clinically aggressive way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super important for sure. Awesome. Yeah, I guess, I mean, my last question was going to be like, what is your vision if you have one for medicine as a whole? And I feel like we did already touch on that.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about my vision or future of medicine, and I'm reaching out to different healthcare practitioners or trying to find healthcare practitioners who are on the same wavelength, so to say, I think of, there's this video of YouTube, and if you just type Canadian doctor, Republican senator as keywords, you'll find that in the US there was a hearing for their healthcare system, and they invited a Canadian doctor from actually the Women's College Hospital. So I think it's Dr. Danielle Williamson.
Okay.
And, you know, this Republican senator was obviously berating her about social healthcare system or socialized healthcare system, and she gave this analogy of running late to the whole meetings because there was only one, like, entranceway with security, and there was a whole lineup of people.
Yes.
But they had a whole other area where people could have formed another line, and there was also like a security machine and all that stuff. And so her point to the whole conversation or discussion is, when it comes to healthcare, it may not be about the amount of resources you have, but how you organize those resources. And so, going back to that analogy of that medical doctor that hired a naturopathic doctor, and, you know, that naturopathic doctor will put the recommendations and the medical doctor will just sign off on the chart as well. This is what the naturopath is recommending, right? I think by knowing what our key strengths and weaknesses are and how we can collaborate together and come together as a village, so to say, is my ideal vision of medicine,
mm-hmm.
right? So yes, maybe you only have $15, 15 minutes, so to say, to see
mm-hmm.
your medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Let at least, you know, the medical doctor send you off to a holistic nutritionist or a
mm-hmm.
naturopath or a herbalist, and you know, do that collaborative
mm-hmm.
type of medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I see the future of medicine, is us learning to grow with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And grow in peace and grow in hugging it out and shaking
mm-hmm.
hands and saying, how can we help and support each other, and what can we, you know, reorganize within the system so
mm-hmm.
that patients can have affordable, accessible, and amazing integrative
care.
Medical care.
Yeah, totally. Amen to that. Oh my gosh. Yes, that would be great. I think too that I don't even know what I was gonna say. There's something. It's gone now. I'm blown away by the vision. Yeah. Are there any little pieces of advice you would give from your experience to practitioners that are practicing complementary medicine? It's already like it's drilled into my head to say alternative, because people, I feel like
yes.
when I say complementary medicine, they're like, I don't know what that means.
But again, as being the pruners.
Yes, we have to.
Society,
mm-hmm.
or being the pruners of this alternative medical culture that we have,
yeah.
I think it's really important to, if we really want an integrative medical system,
mm-hmm.
we need to stop using polarized language
yes,
of
yes.
I'm alternative and you don't need your Synthroid, here's some kelp, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think we need, you know, like if a, you know, so I
yeah.
think we need to be the changers within the culture
yes.
that says
we can
We're,
have both.
Yes,
we
can
have all
both.
Of it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Are there any pieces of advice you would give to complementary healthcare practitioners on how to make their practice more inclusive and accessible to communities in need of that?
I'd say the first place to start is to really assess or address or think about the morals and the ethics and the principles and the philosophies that are behind your practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't just have to be from a clinical standpoint, it could be from a personal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Like the reason why, you know, I choose to have consultations under $100
mm-hmm.
and, you know, try to provide people within, like with the best integrated medical care possible
mm-hmm.
And be reasonable about it, is because I believe in social justice and
mm-hmm.
change
mm-hmm.
and that providing this type of medicine shouldn't just be for the upper
mm-hmm.
middle white class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
It should be accessible to all people.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, to provide that accessibility, I need to change my practice from within.
Mm-hmm.
And initially when I started out, and having had, you know, your standard typical practice of charging $150 to $200,
mm-hmm.
maybe even more an hour,
mm-hmm.
And doing that, I didn't feel satisfied.
Yeah.
And it was the moment that I dug deep into my philosophies
mm-hmm.
about what I believed in with my ethics and my
mm-hmm.
social justice
mm-hmm.
and all this, that, the other, and did the work into blending that within how I can fit these things into my practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's when my practice started to grow
mm-hmm.
and this abundance started to take place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've just started practicing again since I was in school
mm-hmm.
This past November officially
mm-hmm.
and my clinical, the amount of patients that I'm having is just continuing to grow
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very organic, it's very
mm-hmm.
word of mouth. My website is really dinky and gross, and I'm not really
not
doing
gross.
Much on social media, but I think if you just put it out there
yeah.
to take care of people, the universe will do its job,
mm-hmm.
God will do its job into
mm-hmm.
providing that abundance towards you as well.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Oh man. Oh, thank you so much, Nathan, for being here and giving us little like pearls of wisdom. I feel like we could keep going forever.
Of course.
Infinity. And I think I would love to have you back to talk about, like, I had a question about, like, gut health, and I just feel like we need a whole episode
for
that.
Oh,
yeah. Because this is not going
to
work.
I like
if
to
we
talk
do it
about
now.
The shits. The
we
got to
talk about the poops. We touched on it briefly earlier in the podcast, but, like, that is one of the most, I think, complex systems of the body is the most complex system. Like, it's the digestive system.
Yeah, it's I'd say the, you know when you're putting a tent and there's that pole in the middle that holds the tent up?
Yeah.
That's what I think of.
Yeah,
when I
she's
think
a big
digestive
pole.
System.
Oh, like
yes, she is.
Oh, my goodness.
#Obergina's
so
life.
Where can people find you to book with your amazing self, which I 100% recommend doing for any and all of the needs, but where can they find you?
They can find me here at Wellandgood Pharmacy. So I'm typically here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and then I'm seeing patients every Thursdays. As my practice continues to grow, I'll be expanding my clinical days. But yeah, if you ever need a friend or a person to talk to, please stop by. And
yeah,
I'll be here.
Person.
I try.
And your Instagram is Nate's Health Corner. Am I correct? I'm sorry. I can edit that out if you want.
But even that Instagram has become more of
personal Instagram.
A personal music
right
type. Homage type thing as opposed to
like a health
I'm working on
what
it.
What about the website?
The website,
can we tell people about the website?
We can link it.
Okay
because it's too damn long.
Okay, that's
since I started practicing, I have a very like it's a Wix site, and
yeah,
so it has that,
it has the Wix
www.blahblahblahblah.wixsite.com/blahblahblahblah.
I know, it's so funny. Even like when I made the first email that I have for seeing patients, I have to change it because it's emmadowney.herbalconsults@gmail.com, and I'm like, that's too many letters.
Yeah,
and I hate it. So I feel ya.
Yes,
because then people don't want to type it.
Yes,
I will link it, that'll happen. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of like leave everybody with, or anything that I've missed?
The only thing that comes to mind is that, again, if you are an integrative medical practitioner that's out there, just remember to be kind with yourself, to be patient with yourself, and also be kind and good to your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're ever going to make a change and difference in the world, it's better if we have more voices than being a lone wolf.
Yeah, totally. Or top dog.
Yeah.
I like this like animal analogy.
Step away from colonialism, people.
Yes. Oh, beautiful.
So yeah, that's my last take. If anybody's offended by that, I'm sorry.
I don't know if anybody could be. It's too nice. It's too inclusive. It's perfect. Oh, my goodness. Yes, thank you so much, Nathan, for being on Herbs Acupuncture and everything else. And we will see y'all soon.
Thank you, Miss Emma. And if you want to see Miss Emma, she's also seeing patients here at Wellandgood Pharmacy.
This is a true fact.
I advertise for you, sweetie.
Still scary. Still feel like there's so much. There's just like every new experience, there's tons to learn. But yeah, come by to Wellandgood Pharmacy and see the people if you're local. And if not, I think we both do phone consultations.
Yeah.
We both do distance consultations. So that's always an option.
Yes.
All righty.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.